Well, welcome to this conversation. I'm here today with two of my colleagues. We're going to be having just a really informal conversation. I'm here with Dr. Daniela Salazar, who is the Education Director at Lighthouse Arabia and also clinical psychologist by training, who works extensively with corporate entities and corporate clients on an individual basis. I'm also here with Anna White, Senior Occupational Therapist and Director of Mental Health First Aid, UAE. Anna works extensively with corporate organisations and government entities as well. And finally, my name is Dr. Robert Chandler, Clinical Psychologist by training and also the Director of Corporate and Workplace Services here at the Lighthouse. Okay, well, welcome to the conversation, guys. Really looking forward to this. And I suppose as a starting point and just as background, one thing we hear a lot about from the companies we engage with, the government entities we engage with, is how do I make my employees feel more connected? How do I make them feel more satisfied, maybe more happy at work? And I know some of us have some issues with that word happy and what that means. But I don't know, maybe Daniela, to begin with, do you have a sense about, well, what does fulfillment or happiness at work mean?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. I think we're getting mixed messages at the moment in regards to happiness. Mm. And at work, we're hearing goals and KPIs and working long hours and getting lots of stuff done. And then when we really look at how happy these clients are when they're reaching these goals, meeting the KPIs and doing what they need to be doing, they actually don't feel fulfilled. They don't feel happy. They feel stressed. They feel anxious. They feel overwhelmed. And so if we take a deeper dive into happiness, I would mean that we would need to look at the type of things that are bringing back meaning, that's bringing back a sense of purpose. It's not the long hours. It's how we connect with our work, how we relate to our colleagues, how much sense of purpose we have in an organization. Mm. So I think these are some of the themes that we're talking about in our therapy, in our individual therapy, and redirecting that concept of happiness.
It's really interesting you mention that, because I'm reflecting on my own clinical work and I hear what you have just said, which is, you know, I'm meeting the deliverables, I'm meeting the deadlines, I'm getting promoted, my salary is increasing, you know, I'm working my way up the ladder, but I still don't feel connected, I still don't feel satisfied. So it's a theme for sure. I mean, Anna, have you got a sense about what does that idea of happiness or fulfillment mean at work?
I think it is very individualized on an individual, but also on a company as well. I think that often employees are kind of overwhelmed by traditional ways of thinking. Our employers are, supervisors, managers are, of, you know, salaries make people happy, projects, promotions. But I think where the gap is asking employees, where are you? And are you happy? What do you need to be happy? Yeah. Because often we just presume. In the corporate world, we presume. We use maybe our own personal motivators or our history or what makes us feel satisfied and happy, and we push those onto the people around us. So I think step one is really around asking, because it can be anything. For some people, it might be that promotion. For others, it might be time off. For others, it's being recognized. For others, it's autonomy. It's, you know, not having to check in and out, but it is individualized. So it's space to ask.
Yeah.
And we often forget to ask.
I think it's such a valid point. And I think, you know, one of the things that we do as, you know, leads here at the Lighthouse when we're working with organizations, and one of the services we offer to companies is this survey up front, right? Yeah. What's your baseline? How many hours do your employees work? What does really matter to them? How much do they feel like they belong? What is the psychological safety within the organization? What motivates these people? Because only once you've got that baseline can you really think about, right, how do we target? How do we intervene? How do we make things better? So I think it's, such a valid point. So Anna, in your work with corporate organisations, obviously you deliver a lot of workshops and trainings and our mental health first aid training programme here at the Lighthouse, and you meet therefore with a lot of employees. What do you say to them in terms of making them feel more satisfied at work?
I like this question. I think it really depends where they're coming from. Like, we need a starting point. That's usually what I tell them. Mm-hmm. Usually when we see employees or we interact with them, I would say a common theme would be they want to blame. You know, they blame the company, or they blame the hours, or they blame the projects or their schedule, which may be the issue. But a huge part of it is self-reflection. It's really stopping and asking themselves that big question: where am I on this journey? What is making me satisfied? What is taking away from that? What is giving me energy? What is draining? Because that self-reflection needs to come before we blame, before we can make change. But I often find that a lot of people kind of get caught up in the race, the treadmill of, you know, I'm unhappy, or I'm exhausted, or I'm overworked, and it's the company's fault. It's somebody else's fault. So I think that's a big part for me. It's really recognizing where they are and really understanding what they can do to change before the bigger thing, the company, changes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And I think all of us have this conversation with organizations and employees, right? These two spheres have got to come together. There are some responsibilities that are on the organization to provide a healthy culture and good practices in the workplace, but there's also an onus and a responsibility on the individual. Mm-hmm. What's your mindset towards work? How do you engage with work? What are some of your thinking patterns and cognitive distortions at work that may contribute to things like burnout? And obviously in things like our Burnout Masterclass, we take a deep dive into this stuff to really help the employees take ownership, mm-hmm. I think. And Danny, I know that in your individual therapy with corporate clients, people from the corporate world in very senior positions, how easy is it for those individuals to take responsibility and kind of own their part in their well-being at work?
Yeah, you know, I think it's difficult. It's difficult to own that, because you have a senior position in a corporate where you're worried about, you know, reaching those goals and getting the company to achieve certain KPIs. So a lot of the times that self-reflection isn't there. Yeah. We're so worried about achieving something or getting to that end goal that we don't stop and think, how am I impacting my team? What is my style of leadership? Yeah. How am I modeling a healthy lifestyle? Am I putting boundaries to work as a leader? Am I communicating effectively with my team? Am I taking the time to reflect over my self-care? Do I have any activities in which I can relax and feel fulfilled outside of work? And sometimes, because life happens so fast and you're in a leadership position just focused on work, that time to reflect on your life outside of work isn't there. Yeah. So that's what takes a little bit more time to sort of get leaders to reflect on, right?
And I think let's just pick up on this theme of leadership now, because I think it's super important. And we know from the research, don't we, that the health of an organization, the culture within an organization, is heavily dictated by a leader's mental health and well-being. As we know, leaders act under a microscope and speak through a loudspeaker, right? And that's felt by the organization. And I think some of the things you mentioned there in our advocates course that we do for senior leaders, we're really making the business case for why they need to take it seriously and take their own mental health seriously, not just for themselves and their own well-being, but also for the health of the organization underneath. Anna, I know that you speak a lot to leaders, particularly in HR, in some of the relationships you manage with some of our corporate partners. What's your sense about the general mental health and well-being of leaders currently in the UAE? I know that's a massive question, but
I would say it really does depend on the organization. Yeah. I would say organizations that have done some of our trainings, that have that sense of mental health literacy, like they have dived into what it is, what mental health is, what mental illness is, you know, how to recognize things in myself that might be, I might be struggling with, how to pick up on difficulties my colleagues might have, the companies that I've put in the work, the leaders who've showed up to those smaller things. I recognize they don't have the time to maybe engage in longer trainings, but when they've showed up and they've really opened up that door of learning and wanting to understand, that's where you see change. Yeah. That's where you see them really taking part, showing up and being there for their employees. And the employees see it, because you need, as you said, everything that a leader does is amplified. They're like the thermostat in the company. If they're too high or they're feeling a certain way, every single department will be. So it's just about setting the tone at the beginning, and then usually the rest of the jigsaw starts to fit into place.
Yeah, I would agree. And maybe then if we just move to, because again, we all work with leaders in some capacity. And Danny, again, just going back to some of the clinical work that you do with leaders. What I sometimes try and do is, because I think we've worked with so many leaders over many, many years, is try to theme and group together leaders that are taking care of their well-being, their mental health, they're performing in a productive way, they've got good work-life balance. What are the common denominators that we see, right? And I've got a sense about what some of those are. But from your clinical experience, what factors predict a leader's overall sort of happiness, fulfillment, and mental health? What common themes do you notice?
I think one of the main ones is clarity about their values, around their values as an individual, right? What type of leader do I want to be? How do I want to show up inside the workspace and outside the workspace? Because we see leaders that are very involved in their work life, but then we go and dive a little bit deeper into their personal life, and they might not be as involved, and they might not feel as fulfilled, or there might be some trouble there. So what type of individual do I want to be inside and outside of work? So values being one of them. The second part of it is self-care. And I always say self-care is not selfish. It's an act of service to your team, to your family, and to yourself. So how much awareness do you have of self-care, and how are you fitting that in your schedule? And that goes very, very much aligned with boundary setting, right? Am I able to say no to something, to say yes to self-care, or to say yes to family time, right? The time management and prioritization of the things that they're investing time in is super important. So time management, value, clarification, self-care awareness would be some of these themes that I would say would be very important for a leader to have.
I think I would echo all of those from my clinical work, particularly the values alignment. What kind of person do I want to be? What kind of leader do I want to be? How do I want to show up for my organization? I would also add a couple of dimensions to it that I see as well. I think a key factor is this leader able to step back from the experience that they're in and see it from a different perspective? So we call this psychological flexibility, this idea of there is a situation, I feel like I'm in it, but can I take a step back and look at things from a slightly different perspective, instead of getting married to a particular narrative about how awful the company is, how burnt out I am, etc. That's a theme and a skill often that clients are learning with us if they're on our corporate counselling pathway service that we offer here at the Lighthouse. That skill of developing psychological flexibility is sometimes something we need to work on.
I would even add also seeing that person as, you know, in a 360 view. You know, you see the employee, but I don't see the wife at work, I don't see the daughter at work, I don't see the sister at work, but that's still that person that comes to work. And if you can, you know, show a little bit of that compassion or that understanding that work is just 8 hours of their day, but they have a life outside of work that we also need to acknowledge and understand and perhaps be a little bit curious about. So these weekly check-ins with your team, this ability to talk through other areas of their life that might be impacting their work, is also a key, you know, theme, and I think a skill that leaders need to have. You know, it's not just work talk. It's so important to feel connected to your team members at a different level so that you can make accommodations, you can make modifications, you can talk about what the employee needs at the end of the day for there to be a bigger sense of belonging to the organization.
Exactly. And I think something that I would also add, I'm not sure if the two of you see this a lot with your clients, is leaders who can be vulnerable. And I think we have this idea in the corporate world that vulnerability is a weakness, like I can't show all my cards. You know, they shouldn't know what happens outside of work. And I think that we've kind of misconstrued the idea of being vulnerable, because we know some of the greatest leaders in the world know how to be vulnerable. And vulnerability doesn't always have to be show and tell everything. It is a leader who can admit their mistakes. It's a leader who can reflect. It's a leader who can say, I'm sorry, or I shouldn't have done that, or someone who's consistent and transparent. And I think employees really respect that because, and I always say this in our mental health first aid training, that level of vulnerability coming from a leader opens the door for everyone else. And once I can see my leader doing it, it means I feel safer in doing that myself, and kind of adding into the whole concept of psychological safety as well.
Yeah. Psychological safety is something that we talk a lot about here at the Lighthouse at the moment, and we know it's the number one predictor of high performing teams. Essentially, we've got our masterclass that really deep dives into this, and just tying together what you were both saying about this idea of vulnerability, but also understanding colleagues in 3D, three dimensions, 360. I think, you know, many people would previously turn up to work and just think, right, I leave home life at the door. Once I cross that threshold, I'm an employee, I'm a worker. And we know that that's just not the case. And Danny, what you're saying about coming to know your colleagues in 3D, not sharing all, as you were saying, Anna, but understanding this person's backstory, this promotes psychological safety and togetherness. And actually, we find this on our group learning journeys that we do, where we take a group of leaders over this 3-6 month process of understanding each other in 3D. So you're no longer just seeing the CFO, okay? You're actually seeing the child that grew up in a different country and understanding that person in 3D. And that's powerful. That's powerful for connection at work. So based on our discussion today, I am a leader within an organization. I'm overworked, I'm struggling at home with my relationship, I'm feeling burnt out, I'm feeling disconnected, I'm feeling cynical about the work that I do, and I really, really, really just want to increase my fulfillment, and I want to know what I need to do now. What three things are you giving me, Daniela?
I would say, let's work on that self-awareness a little bit more. Let's think about the things that drive you, that motivate you, that used to motivate you before that are not anymore. So connecting with your values, I would say that's number one. Number two, identifying what those triggers are, and let's work around that with coping mechanisms that can help you feel a bit more regulated at work. And let's think about that skill set that we need to have in terms of communication, building that psychological safety with your team if you're a leader. You know, talking out at work is important. You don't have to, you know, have all of these uncomfortable feelings on your own. There is a place at work where we can talk about them. We can perhaps ask our manager or our team to have a check-in so that you can have a better way of working that works for you.
So I really hear there, values, coping skills, connection.
Yeah.
Anna? Three things that you're going to do to help me with my well-being and fulfillment at work?
I would say I would echo Danny's first point, especially with regards to self-awareness. I think you're lost if you can't really come back to that present moment and recognize where you are. List those things. That needs to be step one. I think secondly and thirdly, I would divide it into short term, like in the moment, because most people and leaders need to keep going. You still need to go to work tomorrow. So I think you really need to ask yourself, what do I need to do every day in my day to make this easier for me? Mm-hmm. How do I need to, what do I need to give myself in order to survive? It might not be thriving this week, but surviving. And that could be anything from your morning routine to your evening routine, to taking breaks in between meetings, to catching up with colleagues, to saying no more than you say yes this week. So those short-term daily things in between meetings, etc. And then I think lastly, I would say it's about prioritizing the long-term changes that you might need to make. And that could be bigger things like your responsibilities at work. It could be realigning on your values that Danny's already mentioned. It could be pressing the restart button on your sleep management, on your, you know, nutrition, on your exercise habits. It's the bigger things that we all know we should do, but we often forget to do them when we got caught up in the week. So I'd say those would be my three things. Self-reflection, coming into the present moment, recognizing that you're not okay right now, and that's also okay. Secondly, focus on what small things you can do every day in order to get through the day. And thirdly is going back to that master plan. What are the long-term things that I need to change in my life?
I think all of these are great. I think from my perspective as well, and I find myself saying this a lot to clients right now, is before any of this good stuff, because we know we need to be aligned with our values, we know we need to sleep, we know we need to drink more water, eat well, push back, delegate, all of that stuff. But even before that, we need to take responsibility. Because I hear this and have heard this in the consulting room for, you know, quite some time. I just can't. I know what I need to do, but I can't. The system doesn't allow me. And actually, we've got to accept some self-authorship, some responsibility, some accountability. And if there are barriers and blocks to you getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep, that's fine. We can work on those barriers. But it first requires you to step into a place of agency and self-authorship and say, no excuses, like, I am responsible for this. I have a choice. And that choice is not always easy. But I need to step into that mindset.
Exactly. And focusing on the, I mean, as you said, obviously there are survival skills at the short term, but really that master plan, that long term thinking, that bird eye view is going to be really important. What are the benefits of focusing on my master plan, of making, you know, saying no to certain things that is going to be painful because you're giving up on something that you like, but you're saying yes to something that's going to be far more important, far more valuable in the long term. We're so used to these, you know, short, easy answers to just get away from pain and discomfort. And part of the learnings, I think, in therapy is that there's no shortcut and that life is painful. And part of our job is to keep going, and you have the strength within you to make the right choices. It's a choice that you have to make at the end of the day.
Exactly. I would echo that. And something that you said as well was, you know, people show up to therapy and they show up in front of you and they say, I can't, like, it's not going to happen. There's no answer here. And I think that's something that leaders, employees, everyone, we all have to accept that, as you said, there isn't the secret sauce or message or answer. And I feel sometimes people show up and they think, give me, tell me what I need to do, quick answer, I'm in a rush, you know, I need to get back to work, whatever it might be. But it's recognizing that this takes a lot of time, a lot of patience, a lot of hard work, and you've got to be really deliberate. It is not something that comes natural. And sometimes people might not be ready for that. So it's also about recognizing I need to make space for this. And it needs to be a priority in order for everything else to fit into place.
I think something you said there really resonated with me, because I think in a consumer society where we can have what we want with convenience and comfort, people expect a change process like this to be the same. And if you make changes, there's always going to be a cost. There's always going to be a cost. If you start pushing back at work, you might upset some people. They might get offended or affronted. And the question I will often ask to clients is, but let's do the cost-benefit analysis, right? Is that cost of pushing back and upsetting a few people versus actually adding 5-10 years to your life?
Exactly.
Like, go figure, right? So it does need that detailed analysis, I think, sometimes, and just an acknowledgement there will be growing pains as you change and become more deliberate and responsive. It's going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think some people need somebody else to help them with that. I think that's where therapy comes in. Sometimes it's too much to face by yourself, but it's about understanding that going to therapy, you know, essentially doesn't mean that we're going to give you the answer, or it's a, you know, the therapist is going to provide the answer. It's that you will do it, but you have that guided support. You have a plan. That master plan becomes broken down into more achievable parts. Yeah.
And I think a really great first step for, you know, just consulting with an independent professional, something like our emotional well-being checks that we offer here, people that might not quite be ready for psychological intervention, but actually just want a sense check on where they're at in terms of their well-being, what they're doing well, what they're not doing quite so well, and what they might need to think about doing differently. I think this is a great starting point.